Yeah, well, I've been playing music since I was a child, so it obviously manifested really early on in my years. How about you, Gary?
I started late. I was a latecomer. I started towards the end of high school, but it was something I aspired to at a younger age. I just never really got it together.
Any special musical education in your family? Or
I'm the only person in my entire family that's ever played a musical instrument. So that kills that theory.
That kills that story. That could have been a good story. Yeah. Mine might be more interesting.
Yeah, okay.
Now, apart from my brothers, who are obviously in the group, my father and mother were great appreciators of music. They were like, well, my dad was like a frustrated musician, but they never did anything with it, you know. But then we had a couple of grandmothers and aunties and who were opera singers and things like that, ballet, you know, ballerinas. But the ballet side of things has never come in too handy with me, but the musical side obviously has. And I think that it really just comes down to the person, you know. It may help that you've got a family involved in music, but then you come across someone like Gary who is really, really brilliant, you know, and we all stand around in amazement wondering where that came from. But, you know, now he's got his other family, which is in excess.
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
The family.
Yeah, well, there's three brothers, as you obviously know, and then we've all been together since high school, so basically there's six brothers, and Kirk and Tim have known each other for a couple of zillion years, and I've been playing music with Andrew for about almost that many, a zillion years, but we've basically been together for about 17 years, all through high school. It's from we youngsters.
70 years.
Well, I just got out of the bath and had a shower, so I look pretty good right now, but I mean, usually, yeah, we don't look too great first thing in the morning after a gig. We try to avoid mirrors in the morning, but well, we've had our fair share of being on tour, and we've also had our fair share of taking a bit of time off so that we can enjoy, you know, what we're doing. I mean, there's bands that are out and are really popular right now that just since they started haven't stopped, and that's the sort of thing we wanted to avoid. Because it'll really kill you really quickly, you know. Not perhaps in a mortal sense, but it'll kill the band, you know, because you won't be able to take it anymore.
It'll kill the music, because to enjoy making music, you've got to enjoy sort of all the rest of it. And the performing and the making of records is the most enjoyable part of being in a band, and you don't want to overdo it by too much travelling. But we've sort of worked out a good balance in the last 3 or 4 years to help save the band, and because we just figure that making records is the most important part of our career, and I think still the best is yet to come. We have a really good time playing live. We really enjoy playing music together, and the whole reason we're doing this club tour is to really enhance that enjoyment, because in a smaller place you have a lot more fun. You can hear everybody's instruments better. It's more contact with the crowd, and it's just you just get more interaction between the musicians on stage, because you hear everything everyone's playing, whereas in some of the big stadium places you get you're a bit at the mercy of the sound equipment, you know, the foldback and whatever. So sometimes it gets a bit lost.
Well, the thing was, it wasn't because we were that enthusiastic that we couldn't stop doing gigs. The thing is that once you decide that you want to be a professional band, it costs money, you know, and if you don't have any sort of collateral or capital to invest in what you do, you have to borrow money or just don't pay your bills, you know. So what would happen was we'd hire a PA, hire a truck, hire some people to help us set it up, you know, road crew and that sort of thing. But, you know, even doing it cheaply at the end of the week, you've spent thousands and thousands of dollars and you haven't made anything. So what happens is that you sort of, that early period of a band's development is a really crucial one, because if you stop before you've paid off your bills, you're really screwed up, because then you owe all this money and then you've got to go work some job you don't want to work at to pay off the money that you lost trying to do the thing that you've always wanted to do, which can just be really crippling, you know. So we just found that we didn't have any choice. We had to play 9 gigs a week just simply to pay for the last month of touring, you know, and hope that eventually it would happen, you know.
And we had some examples of those other bands around at the time that really had a lot of debt because they didn't work that hard.
We did that for years. We still do it. You know, most big bands still do it. You know, we come to a point where, yeah, we start to make money to pay off the bills, and then for the first time in a few years, you start sort of making a bit, you know. But then that's got to be put back in to meet your expectations of what performance you want to provide, you know, what production you can do. I mean, it's not all about money, but initially, money plays a big important part of how much a band works, because it really tells whether you're going to make it or not, you know. Well, through that part, anyway.
It would still be something in music. I think all of us have had experience at production, producing records that we've worked on ourselves or other people's music. I think everyone in the band's had some sort of production experience. I think most people in the band would probably head towards that. Or I don't know if we'd all, any of us, form another band. I think, you know, if NXS broke up, that'd be a big loss of our, you know, a big part of our lives. But as far as anything outside the music industry, I don't know. I'd be scared to think about sort of venturing off outside the music industry.
I used to be in school and I used to look out the window and stare into space thinking, what am I going to do, you know? I mean, all I keep thinking about is going home and playing drums, you know, and I get home and I sit and play my drums, you know, what am I going to do, you know? And like sometimes I sit out the bus window, you know, from the airport or something, thinking, God, what will I do if this, you know? So anyway, that's 16 years later. I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll just sit looking out the window or something. but I seem to do that very well. No. But yeah, I don't know. I would like to try something other than the music business. But whatever you do, you're in a business. You're involved in some sort of business because you're trying to make money to, you know, that's why you have a job, I guess. But when it comes down to it, you're best off doing something that you love to do, because you're gonna be better at that than you would something you don't enjoy. And if you do something you don't enjoy long enough, it'll kill you, you know. So not that being on the road won't kill you first, but I mean, don't know. I've always been interested in, say, restaurants or something.
Shoe salesman.
I have to think about that. I'll come back to you about that. Or maybe even a resort somewhere, like in Thailand or something like that. I could get into that. Or, you know, have a modeling agency or something. Anyway. No, I'll just look out the window, I think.
You wrote something new in Australian music, also in the beginning when you were playing in the club, mm-hmm. because you were putting a lot of soul music in. And to my knowledge, Australian bands were more hard rock bands. Mm.
There were a lot of bands that played pretty eccentric kind of music. There was bands, actually still going, a guy called Joe Camilleri, who's got a band called The Black Sorrows. He had a band called Jojo Zepp and the Falcons, and they had sort of brass and they played some pretty wacky sort of music. There was some, and Split Enz were around at the time over from New Zealand. There was some pretty eccentric kind of music going on, and I guess it was very easy to absorb other influences as well, and for it to sort of blend into what became the NXS sound. Mm. But we were lucky with the Australian radio format when we were younger. Being sort of an island out in the middle of the Pacific, we absorbed everything. I mean, on our radio, you had AC/DC. The next song was the Supremes. The next song was MacArthur's Park or whatever. I mean, there was no sort of format to the radio, and we just got to absorb a hell of a lot of different influences in that way as well.
So you travel a lot during all this year around the world. Is that always very important for you to go back to your roots? Or
to go back to home?
To Australia?
No, it certainly isn't boring after traveling months and months to go home. I think it's easier to get bored with traveling than it is to be bored with being at home. But that's, I don't know, I mean, I'm only saying that because I really haven't been home for about 10 years, you know. But no, not really, not properly. I mean, I still don't really have a place in Australia that I live in, you know.
Besides your modelling agency resort in Thailand.
And the restaurant.
And the restaurant.
And the window pane business.
Right.
but anyway, what was the question? No. Oh, God, going home. Yes, I love it. I mean, I think Australia's a great place, and I don't know if it's just because it's where I'm from, but I think it's probably one of the best places in the world. I think the people have got a lot of growing up to do, but the country's beautiful. No, I think I am, definitely. I mean, I was taught piano when I was like 5 or something, for about a year or so, which set me on the course for that for a while. But, you know, all the while I was really interested in drums, and I'd always been drumming, when, you know, since I was 3 or 4, just with drumsticks on anything that I could hit. I think my mum and dad would prefer me to do something more melodic. So anyway, instead of just wrecking everything that's horizontal. Then, you know, I stopped lessons, and I just taught myself drums. And eventually, when I was about 16, I had a couple of drum lessons, and it just completely threw me off. I mean, it just was just like sticking a stick in a revolving wheel. The whole thing just stopped, and I found that I couldn't play as well as I used to. So I had to just try and get over that awful experience of being taught how to play music, and realign myself. I think everyone in the band basically is an intuitive, you know, musician. Yeah. Gary, you taught yourself, didn't you, Gary?
Yeah, I've never had any lessons of any description. Kinda. I think we sort of fly by the seat of our pants sometimes. I think as far as the career we're in now, I think anyone who in the band who said that was their chosen career might be fibbing a bit. I think it just happened. I think the band got together in school, and it was just so much fun that we just sort of tumbled into it. And I think we all had sort of other jobs, but that was basically to save money to buy a van. Like, I bought the van for the band and stuff. And I think from the beginning we all knew that the band was more fun than any career. But as far as looking at it as a career, I think we'd all be sort of liars to say that we always knew it would be a long-term career. I mean, it's luckily it's panned out that way, but I think it was just more fun than anything we'd ever experienced before when it first got together, and that's what kept it going and still does. Well, yeah, I hadn't had any musical background until I got, you know, it was actually by total accident that I actually took up bass guitar. I lost a bet. I played really bad acoustic guitar. I played three chords. That's all I knew. And I had a bet with two other guys from school that whoever knew the least chords would have to buy a bass guitar. So that was me. And then I met Andrew and John, and we formed a band. I let goodbye to the other two guys with their 5 chords. I went straight off with these other guys. And,
with no chords.
With no chords.
Now that seems to be better.
Now they've got 17 kids and no chords.
Well, we always have equal, you know, participation in the process of an album recording. Although some of the groundwork done prior to the recording sessions would be, say, the writers, you know, being namely Andrew, myself and Michael, Michael and Andrew and me. And you know, we bring material to the studio, and then we listen to it, and then we each take our own parts and we just rehearse and record, and then we just build on it from there. We take away things that aren't necessary, or we you know, we strengthen things that are good, or just totally scrap the song and start with another one. But Welcome was really good. Welcome to Wherever You Are was really good for us, because it was an opportunity, being co-producers for the first time, and clearly it was overdue, that we were able to exercise our full creative powers to just do whatever we liked at the time and not be sort of locked in or limited to expectations of you know, your past success or what people love, or, you know, what's the Suicide Blonde on Welcome to Wherever You Are, or which song's the new sensation, or all that sort of stuff, you know. We just sort of wanted to actually make a departure from that so that we could reinstate the magic that we were just discussing about the band when we were younger, you know, which is why we're touring small places now, because we just want to get that magic back, that energy, not that it's really lost, but we just wanted to
kindle it.
Yeah, you know, recharge it a bit.
Also, we've been recording. We've got another album sort of in the can, on tape, ready to sort of be finished off and released later in the year or early next year. So we've got all this new material that the public's never seen us play, and about 6 songs we're playing, like in the show, that they've never heard. So it would have been a bit silly to go out and play big stadiums. So the club thing is sort of, it's just a way for us to help sort of just recharge ourselves, as John said, because it's musically, it's very very different for us too. It's not like In Excess Jukebox. We actually have a lot of new songs that people have never seen us play before.
Clearly, we had a lot of great, response from this album. But some of the negative sides of it were really just sort of the critics who were very commercially orientated, and not realizing that Welcome to Wherever You Are was simply a long-term album. You know, it wasn't a designed thing to sort of, you know, it wasn't a McDonald's album. You know, the songs in that record that are just classics that I think I'll be listening to for years and years.
It's really the album we wanted to make, and that's what all our best albums are. I mean, we're really quite selfish in that respect. And Welcome, we think, is our best album so far. And the new one we're doing now, we feel the same way about, that it's as good or better than Welcome. So, you know, it's sort of surprised a bit that it didn't sell, but that's okay. I mean, we still made an album that we're very proud of. We've got the best reviews we've ever got, and except for a few here and there, that, like John was saying. But
it doesn't matter. We're still really just into it. I mean, we're really proud of that.
Yeah, it's a great album. It's fun to record. It's pretty adventurous.
In a way, it would have been probably more dangerous for the group if that was a really huge album.
Yeah, you know? I think so too.
Because you feel like more of an artist this way. Mm. Anyway.